To all who shall see these presents, greetings. I'm Adam Best. This is Veterans in the Wild. Reveille, reveille, reveille. Welcome to another show, ladies and gentlemen. We thank you, as always, for being here. We are truly enjoying where the show's going. We're doing a lot of interviews with a lot of guests. I'm learning a lot about the different branches. I know today is going to be a great show because we have two sailors doing it. So we're working with the best of the best in the DOD. I do always ask that if we're getting any value out of the show, you please subscribe, like it, share with a friend, share with, coworkers, family, and certainly also, give us a review, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. And if you have any suggestions for the show, any guests you'd like to see on here, or anyone whose story you think needs told, I'd certainly love that feedback. And that's all the forms for that are available on our website at veteransinthewild.com. So as I mentioned, we have a Navy veteran on the show today. He is a Navy nuclear specialist, turned professional engineer, worked in the nuclear field for a while. And if you don't know about that, those are highly sought after professionals. The discipline, the technical knowledge, and the dedication, the hard work it takes to work for the Navy's nuclear systems and the civilian nuclear systems is extremely difficult. So the people that qualify and work on those systems honestly can kind of write their own check. Our guest today, though, worked in that area for a long time, was extremely sought after, but he left it to go become a passive income specialist. So I'm really excited about what we're going to learn. You're definitely going to want to take some notes today. And our guest today is Gary McDermott. Welcome, Gary.
Well, thanks, Adam. I appreciate the invite to be on your show. And I look hard to find some memories of something Navy related for the background. So I hope you appreciate that.
Absolutely. One of the first funny things you told me was that when you were towards the end of high school or planning what was going to be after the initial part of your life, you said your father took you to the recruiting office and said, take your pick. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Right. So, basically it was just, January, my senior year, I was already working pretty hard. I was working almost full time at a diner, a local diner in an ice rink. And, I thought I was doing well, and I was excited that, like, I was going to be going to college at the University of Maryland, or so I thought. And then one day, it was January of my senior year, my father woke me up one day. I don't remember when it was. For some reason, I didn't have school that day. And he basically told me that, son, I was thinking about this, and we have a problem. There's no money for you to go to college. And I was just kind of like, he woke me up early. At that time, I wasn't used to getting up as early as he did. And I was kind of in disbelief. I didn't quite understand what he was saying. And he told me, yeah, there's no money for college, but don't worry, I have a plan. We need to go. And I was like, okay. So he puts me in the car. It's me, my mom, and him. And he drove me just a few. When I got there, I knew what it was. I'd just never been there before, but it was a recruiting station. It's a military recruiting station. I remember my mom didn't want to get out of the car, and we go in there. My dad opens the door, and he basically says, the plan is this is the plan. Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, take your pick. I recommend Navy so you can see the world is pretty much what that plan was. And it was definitely not what I had expected, but I walked in and, I went to the Navy because it sounded like a good deal to see the world. And I guess the rest is history, right?
So you really had no prior consideration of joining the military, and definitely no intentions, obviously, of the nuclear field at all?
Well, definitely. And I didn't even know what the nuclear field was until I watched the video where they made it look like it was a college campus. They had these beach volleyball players in Charleston, South Carolina. And they really made this campus for nuclear power school look like it was an amazing place. But no, I had no thought at all about joining the military. I know that my father was in the Army Reserve for quite some time. Not really much on active duty. So it was pretty much, one weekend a month for him. I'd see him put on a uniform, but And I never really thought about it because I already had a job in high school, and everybody that, you know, it was just kind of everybody that I was associated with was looking at college, and so was I.
Yeah, so that must have been a surprise.
Oh, big surprise. I remember my mother didn't even want to get out of the car when all this was happening, and it was, you know, what are you going to do? Like, dad says it's good to do. It's the plan. No money for college. This will take care of your life. And so kind of went on with it. It was an excitement, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. You said early on in your career, you heard a Master Chief talking about planning for yourself. The Navy's not going to have a career for you, or Navy's not going to have a plan for you after you get out of the Navy. He recommended getting a house at each duty station you went on to. And you also had a realization that you didn't really have a purpose. You were sort of working for other people's goals. Can you kind of talk about how that all sort of integrated into the mindset you were developing at a young age?
Right. Yeah. So I guess, I mean, a lot of things you just mentioned there. So let's just take a couple of them and break them down a little bit. Like,
yes,
the mindset thing was something that was probably the hardest and longest and most difficult thing to kind of progress, because when you're told at a young age, like, this is your plan, and then as you know, the military is pretty much about following orders. That's kind of like all you will know. The silver lining in the story is that while I was in the A school, the Master Chief, the Command Master Chief, they typically have this sort of responsibility to kind of rally the troops and keep the morale high. And so the silver lining was that I was just in one of these training classes, and they were talking to us as a group. And the advice that he gave the group that day was something I'll never forget. And to this day, I still really believe that was something that kind of helped set up everything that I've done. And really what he was just sharing with us is that this is because he had done this, and this is the whole concept of passive income that I really was never taught. And that is what he said to us is, if you are able to buy a house everywhere you get stationed, then you will make more money than the Navy will ever pay you. And so with that, it was kind of like you needed to have a plan for when you got out of the Navy, because the Navy, while it may have been the plan for me because there was no money for college, you can only be in the Navy for so long. And once that point is passed, and granted, the Navy has done, I give them credit, a lot more since I had got out to kind of help military skills translate better to civilian skills.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, if you don't have a plan for when you get out of the Navy is not really going to have a plan for you. And so that kind of can set you up to maybe do something that you don't want, or maybe that you're not prepared, or maybe you stutter and you stumble, and it takes a while to kind of figure out what that plan would be because it wasn't already thought about. And so whether it's taking the advice of trying to get passive income producing assets early on in your life, or if it's just having an idea of, you know, what skills, what resume bullets do I need to look at so that when it comes time, you know, all of my skills are rapidly understandable by a civilian employer, you know, whatever it is, you need to make sure you're setting yourself up for either a professional career or passive income producing assets if you want to have a little bit easier of a time to not have to worry about taking maybe a pay cut when you get out, something like that.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think passive income sounds like more fun.
Well, I mean, it's nice to kind of have some sort of income coming in without having to trade time for it is what I like about it.
Yes. How long were you actually on active duty, and do you remember how many houses you had when you separated? Or
yeah, so I mean, I got my start there's a slow and long way, because when I heard that advice with the Master Chief, you know, I was about 18 years old. So
yes.
I mean, it was great advice, but when your father doesn't have the money for you to go to college, that means you probably don't have the money to buy the house.
Yes.
So it took a little bit of a while. So I went through, I was 11, to answer your question, I did 11 active duty years and then 9 years in the reserve because I at least wanted to make it to 20 to get the retirement, which I finally did. But I basically bought three different houses during my active duty time, two of them in the United States and one of them overseas as an investment in the Philippines.
Awesome. Cool. Okay. And as I was saying when we started the show, naval nuclear training is some of the best in the world. It's probably the most respected in the nuclear community. You were a licensed professional engineer. When did the idea of leaving a highly sought after field start creeping in? When did the idea for passive income really start taking roots?
Yeah, so that's a very good question. When I transitioned from the Navy, and this kind of goes along with that mindset that we talked about, that was a shift for me, because when I wanted to transition from the Navy, mostly because I was just gone away from friends and family for so long and not sleeping the entire time that I was in the Navy, I decided that like I needed a transition, but what would you do? So it's like, I still hadn't developed that mindset where, you know, I could go out and do anything that I wanted. It was more or less, there's like a progression, like there's a market for people like me and it's called headhunters. So it seems like the natural thing, just like you go to a recruiting station and then you can take your pick, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines. Well, I guess with these headhunters, you know, they kind of target people. So, you know, when you're in the field and you're closer, like sometimes you get these emails or people tell you about them and they do presentations on your ship. And so I just remember there was probably about three or four headhunters that had either approached me or I'd heard about them and approached them, because I didn't know, you know, how do you get another job? Because you may be familiar with that class called TAP, like transition. I don't even know what it stands for, but the military's version of that one week class where they teach you how to apply for jobs. Yes. Well, I wasn't even allowed to really go to that because I kept getting it turned down by my boss. So I kept like, can I go to TAP? Like I need it's a mandatory class for me to go to learn how to transition and get a job. And I kept getting told the watch bill doesn't support. And it wasn't until the last week, like before the ship was going to go underway and then I was like going to separate. And so it was like, I had to go. I was like, this is the last class. So he let me go, but he said that I'm going to be on nights. So I still had to go on night shift. And then I remember having to get relieved a little bit early so that I could take the commute to go to TAP class. But I mean, how can you stay awake and learn from it? So,
yes.
So between those pressures when I was in the Navy and then having the headhunters, they kind of gave me a bunch of opportunities. So like I could have been at a pump manufacturing company on the south side of LA. I could have been in agriculture, Salt Lake City. I mean, there was a lot of opportunities, but at the end of the day, it was like, there was one that was very close. It was a consulting company that wanted to do design and analysis for nuclear power plants. And so it was like that seemed like, because of the operations experience with nuclear operations, maintenance and training, why not just go do that? Because it's very similar. And so it was kind of along the lines of, it wasn't really like my ideal job, because I kind of never wanted to, when I wanted to get out of the nuclear field, the joke is like, I wanted to get rid of my TLD, which is the little pocket dosimeter that we have to wear that anybody as a radiation worker has to show your dose. Like, I wanted to get rid of that thing and never be in the nuclear field, but because of the convenience and, you know, other people kind of setting goals for me or charting my course, so to speak, yep. I took it out of, you know, not knowing really what I could do, what was available to me. And so it seemed like a natural transition that I knew that I'd be able to do the job. And that was another kind of chapter, but it was very much the same. I mean, I got a lot of hard assignments. They really relied heavily on the operational experience because, you know, in a consulting company, the more money that you can make is made when you can get like the higher contracts. But if you can have more junior folks that need to learn the business to do most of the work at a lower hourly rate, then that makes more money for the company. So someone like me that has quite a bit of operational experience, I could be sort of a, manager or a bridge between some of the business side and some of the work side to help make sure that we could maximize the efficiency of billing. And so with that, I had a lot of hard projects and before too long, I mean, I'll summarize it just for the sake of not boring everybody here on the podcast, but basically it started to get to the point where it was a lot of travel as well. And a lot of like just work, you work hard because there's always billable hours. And I remember one of the experiences I had when we were doing a project was spent fuel pool instrumentation. And I remember having to basically within 5 days travel to 4 different nuclear power plants on the southeast part of the country and then come up with conceptual designs. And so that was a pretty tough job. And just to give you an example, to actually, you know, you plan it out where you're going to be, you do all the legwork up front. So you already have a lot of the drawings, you've reviewed them, you know, kind of where you're going to go, where you're going to put the instrument, where you're going to power it from. And then you show up like, you know, 5, 6 o'clock, whenever you can get there early, do all the walk downs, confirm that everything that you kind of mapped out is going to work. And then at the end of the day, you take all the notes for any changes, and then you send it back to the engineering support team or the CAD team back at the home office, where they go like put the design together for you. And you do that, you know, just imagine doing 4 different plants and not all of them are connected by airports. And then you put these designs together in such a short period of time. It almost reminded me of the pressure and the travel of being in the Navy. So between that and then a couple other options were, you know, there was going to be some longer term travel contracts and like Asia for like 9 months. It just kind of reminded me of almost doing like a deployment. So with both of those things kind of, and at the same time trying to have a family, it just made me feel like I needed to kind of look at something. And so that was kind of where I started figuring out that, you know, the passive income, I did it very slow and it wasn't scaled when I was in the Navy. And so that was kind of what made me think like, why don't I go find a professional that's really done this thing and done it to a high level. And I kind of just studied that and then really decided to scale the business from there to just get as many passive income assets as I could and kind of set myself up for what I already knew what an active duty retirement would have been had I not left active duty and stayed. So that was kind of my first target, was just to recreate that income through passive investments.
You actually led me exactly where I was trying to go with our next question was, when we talked about that before, those that you did that calculation, you figured out how much you would have gotten had you had a retirement, and then you went about trying to build the life of, okay, what would that a retirement had paid me? Okay, now I need to get those assets. Something you specifically said, you know, you have a target, now you have to build a life that's going to create, you know, get you there to achieve that target. And I assume that's something you probably do a lot with the goals and how you built the company as well.
Right. Yeah. And actually, that's part of this sort of, what I've been asked this a lot in terms of like, how did you do it? And, or like, you know, how did you structure it? And so just, it really boils down to, and actually it's a simple, like kind of 5-step process the way that I recall how I did it. And it's basically, you look at the destination. What is that endpoint? Like visualize it and actually like see what it looks like at your destination or your endpoint. Then you kind of work backwards for that. So you work backwards and you set targets. So if you know that, for example, and we'll just give something simple, like say you want to read 10 books a year, like that's what your endpoint is, your destination. Then you would work backwards and you would, you know, take the 10 books, divide by however many days or whatever, and you'd set some sort of target. You know, I'm going to read 5 pages a day.
Yes.
So, I mean, like, for example, like when you look at real estate, if you know, we want to buy this many houses that produces X amount of income. Well, on average, we know that we're going to need to make like, you know, 1 offer a day, 5 offers a day, whatever your target is, you work backwards, you figure out how many offers do you need to make a day. And then what your conversion rate is so that you can kind of do the math. But at the end of the day, it's just you set that target based upon what you want the goal to be or what that end state looks like. And then you make sure that the target, if you can, try to set a target that is achievable even on your weakest day. So like, you know, if it's reading 5 pages a day and that's only going to take you, you know, maybe 10 minutes, that's something that you're going to set yourself up for so that it's achievable even on your worst day at the end of the day when you realize that you can hit that target.
Yes.
Knock it out. Because if you, what can really derail you is if you, you know, the target's hard and then you have a rough day for whatever reason, maybe life gets in the way and then you miss the target and then now you're behind, now you're in the hole. And then you miss the next one because sometimes when it rains, it pours.
Yep.
So you want to set those targets so that they're achievable and that you can commit to them. And that's pretty much the to set this up. And the other kind of steps that I usually build in there is commit to the goals, write them down, be serious about them. So your goals, you write them down when you wake up in the morning before you go to bed, you want to make sure that they're top of mind, that you know what your goals are and that you hit those targets. And then the next thing that I would recommend is, and this is what helped me was is to you seek counsel. So you, as you're developing these goals and your the targets, like find somebody that has done it to a high level. Like if you can find, it's just like, I mean, a lot of people use this analogy, but it's the way that I look at it. Like if I want to learn how to play golf, I'm going to go try to find the best person that I have access to. So if you have an amateur, if you have a professional, I mean, the professional is going to help you get the better results faster. So it's [S2] Yep. [S1] The same thing with when I wanted to do passive income, I found somebody that had been doing the same model for 30 years and was at the top of his game. And whatever it is, whether it's you want to write a book, you know, find, don't ask your friends or your family that haven't written anything. Like, go ask somebody that's written 50 or 100 books [S2] Yes. [S1] And talk to them about it. They'd be the ones to give you with clarity what it's going to look like and what it's going to take. So when you find that advice or that counsel or that mentor, that will really solidify all of your plans and make sure that you can do that goal setting and the working backwards to set the targets. And then after that, it's really just an accountability partner. So whether you can, I mean, sometimes if you have to, some of these high level people, you may have to pay. So they may not, you may not be able to get them as accountability partner. But at the end of the day, you need somebody, whether it's that mentor that you have that's a professional that's been doing it for 30 years, or if it's somebody that's maybe a little bit ahead of you but's trying to do the same thing, you need to find somebody, because if we're left to our own devices, like if you don't have the chief yelling at you, or if you don't have, you know, so the boss yelling at you, like, do this, stay on track. I mean, if we're left to our own devices on a goal that we don't have any supervision, direction, or accountability, we may fail. And so that was what was critical for me, was just to have somebody like-minded, even sometimes more than one person like-minded, to just make sure that, you know, I could help them with their goals and hold them accountable. And they do the same thing for me. Like, did you make your offers last week? How many offers did you make? Why didn't you make them? And that way I'm making sure that I hit those targets, because if you hit the targets and you have the plan, then you will hit the goal and you will get to your destination.
Yeah, makes sense. And absolutely, definitely with the accountability is the biggest thing I've been realizing this year through coaching. And, yeah, truly, I've been using, I don't know if you've heard, well, an app like a distraction blocker. So it literally shuts off, you know, all social media and all websites, all the other things on your phone, where, you know, pick this thing up, this little prison cell that's known as our cell phones. But when you can shut off all the distractions, you really do realize like how much more productive you are when you get rid of everything else. And all you can do is like, well, I don't have any distractions, so I can just keep working. And it really has made an impact on my productivity too, as well.
Absolutely. I mean, those unexpected calls or texts that kind of derail you and they make you feel like there's a fire you have to put out, when truth be told, most of these, you could wait, answer them at the end of the day after you get most of the business done that you have to do during the workday.
Yep. I heard someone say it recently and it finally hit me, is that email is not for your convenience. It's literally, email is other people's priorities and it's their agenda to push out onto you. And now I'm checking my email like twice a day, because when you realize it's really not there for you, like your inbox is probably 80%, or at least my inbox, I can say, is probably 80% like promotions or sales or people trying to sell something. It's very little, you know, emails, like personal emails between like me and you, or, you know, it's very little actual like personal connections. It's mostly just sales, unfortunately.
Right, right. I mean, that's the reality that we live in.
Yep. As you're trying to grow your business, you said you were recently on an Amazon Prime show.
Oh, right, right. So Amazon Prime Video, and kind of it's basically that those what I kind of just shared with you on the way that I was able to that those like five steps that I've kind of used, you know, looking back at all the places that I've been, those five steps that I've used to set and consistently achieve goals for myself. That's kind of what I am giving back on the Amazon Prime Video show. And it kind of just kind of summarizes the story that we talked about, where I realized through joining the Navy, you know, working a job in high school when I was 16, 17, and joining the Navy right afterwards, and then being kind of led by some headhunters to continue my career in nuclear power. That whole time, I was following goals that were set by other people. And so in the Amazon Prime Video, I kind of share sort of how I realized that I as an individual can set my own goals. And then I also share all everything that I just shared with you that I learned through all these experiences of how I was pretty good at achieving other people's goals. So now it was just a matter of I can share with everybody that anybody can set their own goals. Even if you don't think you can right now, you can set your own goals and achieve them all the time if you realize that you can do it and then follow these five simple steps of visualize, work backwards, set the targets, seek counsel, and then get an accountability partner and commit to your goals and write them down in the morning and at night.
Yeah, makes sense. I was also asking, did you have to pursue Amazon? If someone else wanted to get on an Amazon Prime show, how did you go about that?
Well, so actually, like that was an interesting one. I've always wanted to be on a TV show of some sorts since a young age.
Yes.
In this case, like I wanted to be speaking, but it just was one of those. And so this is another thing that I've learned. And that's if you're given an opportunity, even if you don't think you're ready for it, just say yes. Commit and figure out the rest later. And so I was, because of the job that I'm in now, I have to attend a lot of networking events. And in one of the events, there was a producer of the TV show. And it just so happened that another thing I always like to ask when I meet people at networking events, I want to like find out as much as I can about them, what they're working on, as opposed to just kind of, you know, hey, this is me, this is what I can do for you. And so by trying to find out what this producer was working on, what they needed, I didn't really even know that she was a producer, but she shared with me that there was a TV show that she had and they needed a couple, she was auditioning for the last slot or maybe the last two slots. And like, well, you know, I always wanted to do it. So I was able, that's how I was able to get that audition. And then somehow I was able to articulate well enough, and then I was on the show, and it's a 15-minute TED Talk style, so not like a rigorous TED Talk, but it's very similar to a TED Talk. The show is called Speak Up TV, and I'm on season 3, episode 4. And so that show, if somebody's out there aspiring to be a public speaker or advance their speaking career, that show does it's going to be having, I think they just filmed season 4, and then season 5 will probably be, they'll be casting for that. So Speak Up TV, you can search for it, or you can reach out to me. I'm sure Adam can share contact and I can try to put you in touch with the folks that run that production.
And that's really amazing that all of that came out of one networking event and one connection, really.
Right. I mean, one person, one opportunity could change your career. So that's kind of what I'm learning. And you know, the Navy was one example of networking. We have a lot of people that right now in the military, we're all go our separate ways afterwards. But because of the caliber and professionalism of our military, people that are on active duty right now are veterans. I'm sure we all have different connections that were in our network that we can kind of just go back and see how we could work together and collaborate. So that's kind of what Adam and I are doing here. And if any of that resonates, or if, you know, put the word out, definitely. I love to be able to attend shows or help any active duty, military, veteran, anything. If there's ever something that I can do, or I know somebody that can help, I mean, that's what it's all about.
Absolutely. Do you have any advice for someone getting out in 2 or 3 years, what they should be doing now to set themselves up for if they're looking for a career in passive income, or even just as a supplement to a future job as a civilian?
Right. And so, I mean, the biggest piece of advice, I mean, there's kind of a lot what you just asked there, but as far as like passive income, I mean, I firmly believe that everybody should be looking to acquire passive income producing assets. Now, you have to kind of target it and look at it and understand whether or not you're going to want to manage those, or if you're going to want to acquire them. But at the end of the day, everybody can benefit from passive income. So part of it is a little bit, I mean, some may look at it as risky, but there's other options out there that are not risky. And so it's something that I would encourage everybody to do. The faster that you can do that, the earlier that you can do that, it just really sets you up. So if that's something, even if it's just brainstorming, or if you have an audience that, or if you know somebody that wants to just talk about that on a separate show or just brainstorm, and I definitely love helping to kind of at least give people a map for, you know, what to look at, you know, if you want to manage it yourself, or if you want to hire somebody to manage it for you. But at the end of the day, it's like we want to convert some part of our ordinary income into passive income, so that way when you're buying things that you want or paying expenses, you can pay it out of passive income instead of out of ordinary income. And then as far as, you know, networking, I think having the intention to stay networked or stay in touch with people that you're serving with right now, because we're all going to go our separate ways and there's plenty of opportunity for collaboration. So that really goes, there's a lot of effort that has to be put into following up with people. A lot of times in the military, it's like, oh, yeah, let's catch up, or. But a lot of times we never see some of these people, even though we say, you know, we were great connections while we were in the service. But I would just encourage people to follow up and stay connected, even if it's just once a month, just so that way, if ever there is an opportunity to collaborate, you're not just reinventing the wheel and things are current. You're current of what they're looking for, and they're current of what you might be looking for. And just be true to your network and keep that. So between growing the network and maintaining the network of people, influencers, successful folks that you're aware of, and then acquiring passive income producing assets as often and as early as you can, those are the two biggest pieces of advice that I would share with anybody, whether military or not military.
Awesome. Yeah, it definitely makes sense. And I honestly have to admit to that's something where I failed. And I think a lot of veterans, unfortunately, can't kind of foresee what's about to happen, is that everyone gets out of the military and goes their separate ways. I can probably say that I have less than 5 friends who I could tell you where they still live, you know, who they're married to, what their kids, like kids' names are, and their approximate age. I mean, that's less than 5 out of the 1,000 people I probably knew by name in the Navy. And that's just sort of a sad reality, but it's sort of also like the nature of the beast of you draw from all over the country and then you send them back all over the country. But that is a really good point of just, that is a natural market that we all have and we really could draw upon it.
Yeah. And one of the things that I remember, since we're talking about service, you know, when I joined the Navy, you know, it was like, it was very hard to have the cell phone and everybody's phone number. But now what I'm actually starting to do, and there's actually software that help do it even more, but you can basically on most phones now, you can add all those details that you just said, you know, birthdays, kids' names, where you met, things that they're working on. And then that, the better that we're able to kind of draw upon that, it also strengthens that relationship. And so sometimes our memories may not be the best, but I've had to learn to embrace the technology to achieve the same high level of performance that we all wish that we could do with our brains.
Yep, absolutely. Something I'm starting to ask a lot, well, something I'm going to start asking on every show, and it's something that I'm discovering for myself. Are you registered with the VA?
Yes, definitely.
I think that's something I'm trying to either expand more of or help veterans understand better, is that I think a lot of people are overwhelmed by the complexity of it, but everyone's sort of encouraged when they go to TAPS, you know, hey, register with the VA, but then it's sort of just like, okay, you got the ball and you're going to run with that one. I think a lot of vets are sort of overrun with the complexity of it, but then they don't get all the benefits that they've already earned through their service.
Right. I mean, definitely sharing the information to veterans on that process. And also what I had some trouble with, even some of the different TRICARE or health insurance options available to all the different types of TRICARE out there after you separate, whether that's, you know, in the reserves, whether that's retired gray area reserve, which is what I had to learn where I'm in now. But all of these different benefits that veterans are afforded, we may not know, and the information is kind of hard to take in. And then it's not always the most efficient with the way that the processes are executed. So it's definitely an area that it's good that you're asking that, and it's good that you have resources and support systems available.
Yep, absolutely. What would you say are your proudest moment professionally in the Navy? And then I'll ask you personally as well.
Well, that's proudest moment in the Navy. I mean, there was one. I mean, it's interesting because I guess I've never been asked that. I mean, a lot of people could say, right, some of the more flashy ones, you know, like when I retired, even though, but I think probably the one that I'm most proud of is, I had somebody, so I was a division officer, and I had somebody that was working for me. And at that time I was still in my 20s as a division officer. And this gentleman was a little bit older, in his 30s, had a family. I was single at the time, and we were working really hard. I mean, we were in the shipyard. We were working ridiculous hours. I mean, not sleeping. And I remember he walked up to me one day and he said, "You know, sir, I wake up every morning and my kids are asleep. I go to bed. I come home every night and my kids are asleep. I often wonder if when I go to work," and we're in the engine room, so we're like eight levels down, eight like long steel ladder stairs down to where we work.
Yes.
And he told me, he said, "You know, sir, I often wonder," after he told me about how he never sees his kids, "you know, I often wonder if when I'm going down to work, if I were to slip and fall, if the pain would be less." And so I haven't really thought about it when you asked me what I'm most proud, but I was able to, I didn't know, it was one of the toughest questions or things somebody had ever said to me. And I basically just had to, like, I knew in that moment that I had to let, like, provide the reassurance. I mean, I wouldn't want you to even think about what that pain would be like, because you are so important to this team and our mission. And we would not be able to do this without any one of us all working together. And it was like, I needed to find some way to kind of reassure that, because that stuff I never thought about, but then to look at the perspective of somebody that doesn't get to see that. So I had to kind of reinforce that, you know, we really all need each other right now. This is only temporary. The family will always, you know, this is a temporary kind of pain that we all have to endure to get to where our destination is. And so I was able to at least provide that assurance. And I think that, I don't know, it's hard to say whether or not how much of a difference that I made, but to me, that was probably one of the most powerful moments that I am most proud of in my service was being able to recognize, have somebody at least have the rapport with me to share something like that. And then me being able to be in a position to empathize and then reinforce the team and the mission and everything that we have to do to get through it together.
Yeah, makes sense. And I've climbed down those ladders, and those things used to scare the crap out of me going down to
ropes. Well, now you know why. When you were asking about that, I have like maybe one picture on the flight deck in my whole 2 years on the ship. Now you realize there's a lot of work to get up there. That's 16 decks.
When I was on my first ship, someone told me we were coming home from deployment, and we're all excited to come home. And we knew we were going into the yards for repairs. Someone told me that once we got into the shipyard and we were there for a while, I will want to be back on deployment instead of in the shipyards. And I was like, there's no way that's possible. We're going home every night. We're seeing our families every day. How would we want to be back here at sea? 2-3 months later, I was saying, God, I just want to be back on deployment and out of the shipyards.
the shipyard was probably one of the single most difficult. So I guess that would probably be the second most thing that I would be proud of as an achievement, was just getting through that yard period as the reactor electrical officer and being able to support that 3-section duty and still authorize pretty much the majority of the electrical tags for 6 months or 7 months. I don't even remember how long it was. It felt like an eternity.
6 months, 7 years, whatever. You said you have a book coming out soon?
Right. So just kind of keep the momentum and the continuation with the Amazon Prime Video show that I did. I'm working on a book that is kind of going to expand upon in detail the ways, sort of the story. And then really I want to have this to be out there to just kind of encourage anybody to be able to set their own goals, because for many years I didn't think I could. And so I want to at least give back to share with anybody that it may help to realize that they can set stretch goals for themselves and then give them a little path to consistently achieve these stretch goals so that we can all grow. So that's what the book will be out. And definitely I can share more with everybody as we get closer. We're targeting towards the end of this year, 2021.
Okay, awesome. And where else would people contact you, find you on social media, or find you in your team?
Right. So I'm pretty much everywhere with my name, Gary McDermid. So I do have a landing page, GaryMcDermid.com. And I'm on LinkedIn, Gary McDermid, MacDermid. But that should get you to all the social media and the webpage. And anybody can reach out. We have the contact us, and definitely like to connect and expand the network and help anybody, especially military, active duty, veterans.
Okay. And the name of your company, Gary?
So the private equity company that I run is USA Private Equities.
Okay. Awesome. Well, Gary, I learned a lot on the show. I certainly had a great time, and I'm sure our listeners did too.
Well, I appreciate it. And thanks again. I look forward to watching the replay and hopefully come back when you have some more opportunities.
Absolutely. Take care, Gary.
Take care. We'll see you.
All right. Bye.